I'd like to come back to the first part of your speech where you said, how do we get socialism from the SPG point of view? In respect, you did not answer that question. You continue to talk about the problems of capitalism, but you did not state what the Socialist Party Great Britain point of view is, how we shall see worldwide socialism.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, if first proposition is you've got to know, what is socialism? Socialism means the whole earth, everything in it and on it, owned in common. It means that the population as a whole have democratic control over all the means of production and distribution. That's what it means. Now, we claim, the Socialist Party of Great Britain claims, the only way to get that is when a majority of the world's working class are in favour of it. That there's no quick roads to it, you can't be led to it. Something you can be led to, you can be led away from. So we place all our emphasis on working class understanding. Towards that end, all we as a political party can do is produce literature, have meetings, have debates, from time to time contest elections, and try and publicise the case for world socialism. But as I said, that's not the only agency working for world socialism. The very development of capitalism forces people into looking to an alternative from the present society. Once a majority are in favour of world socialism, what they've got to do is take hold of the state machine. In other words, it'd be pointless for the members of the working class to do what some romantics in the left wing and the anarchist movement say, that is, attack a modern state machine with all its tremendous technical advancement and weaponry and so on, with bottles and chains and half bricks and all the things that working class are liable to get a hold of. We say the only way to do that is democratically through the ballot box. In most developed capitalist countries, not in them all, but in most developed capitalist countries, we already have a way to do that. In other words, we say that socialism could be established in most capitalist countries through the ballot box. Because one, the only way you'll know if a majority are in favour of socialism is count them. And voting's a very good way to do that. Plus the fact that if you leave the state machine in the hands of the spokesman for the owning class, then it'd be impossible to get socialism, because it would be liable to use that state machine against the democratic wishes of the majority. So we claim all we can do as an organisation is propagate the case for socialism. Once a majority are in favour of socialism, what we'll have to do is capture the state machine and declare private property illegal.
Come back.
Yes,
I'd
like to come back the SPGB have been in existence for 76 years now, and when, well, you certainly not had new MPs, have you?
No.
No. And of course you're talking about Labour in its existence for 74 years, doing very little for socialism. My point is that when will the people of the world see the need for socialism? And when will they start to support you democratically? And how can they support you democratically in places like Russia where ballots are not there? And in fact, ballots in this country are not there. And how do you propose to change that system so it will be in favour of the SPG vote?
Ballots not here in this country, did you say?
Yes.
Well, it's true.
Would you describe voting in this country as democratic?
Well, it's true we have been in existence since 1904 and we've had no MPs. The reason for that is the majority of the working class are still in favour of capitalism. They're in favour of the buying and selling. They're in favour of the leadership attitude. When you say that Labour, quote me, that Labour have done very little for socialism, I didn't say that. They've done absolutely nothing for socialism except confuse, except mislead. Now, you ask me an imponderable question. You say to me, when will we support you? I don't know when that will happen. It's only you can decide that. Now, the question is, at present, there's a set-up in Great Britain and France and Germany and the developed Western Europe, where a majority of the working class can express their viewpoints through the ballot box. That exists at present. It's true it's a limited democracy, in the sense that obviously rich men have the control of newspapers, radio and TV and so on, but nevertheless, granted a majority being in favour of socialism, they could get it through the ballot box. Now, in those countries that have not even got that limited democracy, South Africa and Russia and China and so on, and that so-called communist Eastern Bloc that have not got it, well, the workers there, of course, will have to struggle in order to get that. The best thing we can do for them is to propagate the case for world socialism. Let's face it, that's all we can do. It's up to the intelligence and up to the courage of members of the working class and their efforts only, to bring that about. But on your question, when will you support us? Well, I just don't know that. You've not got a crystal ball, or as one comrade of mine used to say about, unfortunately, we haven't got crystal balls. And the thing about it is, I just can't prophesize that. What I can say is this for definite. Until a majority of the working class understand and organise for socialism, we shan't get it.
Thanks.
Well, can you come back in a second?
You were saying when the majority of the working class support socialism, the next step, or the need for socialism, it would be necessary to see the state machine, or see the control of the state machine. Surely, I mean, the state machine in fact, because what it actually consists of is a large number of working class people being paid wages to carry out functions on behalf of the ruling class. And so logically, once the vast majority, can convince the need for socialism, then surely, I mean, you're going to get, I mean, as the Socialist Party says, war doesn't serve working class interests. You'll get massive resignations from the army. You'll get massive resignations from the civil service. There won't be a state machine left, surely, if you convince people to need for socialism. People will just abandon it, because the vast majority of people who work in the state machine are, in fact, working class themselves. They have no property. It's not in their interests. Once they're convinced of that, why do you need to keep talking about seeding the state machine? Well, surely it will disappear of its own accord.
Yes, well, of course, on those occasions when members of the working class have attempted in any way to endanger the property relationships, and from time to time have had uprisings and so on, no socialist revolutions, unfortunately. What we have found there is that any attempt to overthrow the state machine by use of violence, or any attempt to ignore the state machine, it'll just disappear. I mean, an anarchist viewpoint is that it'll just disappear, we don't have to worry about that. We'll just have an alternative society, rather like the old cooperatives or the old Owenites. We'll just have our own little society and ignore this tremendous power they've got. Well, that's doomed to failure, because what we're dealing with here is people who are going to try and hold on to their property relationships. Now, it's quite true what you say, of course, that the vast majority the armed forces are composed of members of the working class and the judiciary, the jailers, the wardens and all the rest of it, are in actual fact members of the working class. That's true. And of course it's going to be a difficulty with a growing socialist consciousness, just how they're going to organise their state machine. But nevertheless, for us to leave that in their hands would be very, very dangerous, especially with such technical advances as nuclear weapons and so on. We think it's absolutely essential, at the best as an insurance policy. Maybe it's the best to make sure I'm not annihilation, is to get hold of that state machine. And as I say, in Western Europe and in the Americas and that, constitutionally, you could do it. At present, of course, they don't. At present, of course, the working class of the world votes for political parties that are going to run the buying and selling system. But just because that happens to be the case, doesn't mean it always have to be the case. We take the viewpoint, you must get hold of that state machine in order to protect yourself. And the only way to do that in modern society is democratically through the ballot box. Plus the fact, of course, that it's very difficult to project about the future. As I said, I've not got this crystal ball. It's a pity, perhaps. But it's no such a pity. Maybe too frightening to look at. But the thing about it is that what we can see is certain definite things. That in the past, when the owning class thought they were threatened, for instance, in the Paris Commune, where they had the state machine, they very ruthlessly suppressed the working class. And in areas like the USSR, where the Bolshevik Party got hold of the state machine, they used that to ruthlessly crush the old Bolsheviks in such uprisings as the Kronstadt and so on, or attempts by areas such as the Ukraine to secede, which they were allowed to do according to the legal constitution, well, they were ruthlessly crushed because the state machine was in the hands of their new masters. So we think it's extremely important that the working class organised politically to get hold of that machinery of government.
Well, I just wondered really whether or not you thought there were any particular reasons why people who work in the state machine should be less able to recognise their interests in the working class than those who are.
I don't think there's any reasons for that, no. I don't think so. See, I don't take the viewpoint that some people take, you know, that all policemen are pigs, all soldiers are hired assassins and so on. Many of them may be rather nasty individuals. In fact, they can vouch for a few of them, unfortunately. But nevertheless, looking at it from a class viewpoint, policemen are members of the working class, and they work for wages. That's their position.
I'm from the United States. It just seems to me the argument you make that the working class is still in favor of capitalism reminds me of the argument of the Southern slaveholders, which said that their slave, the reason they had slaves was the slaves were happy with slavery. But in fact, the working class is fed up with capitalism. It is in my country, it is here, and it is elsewhere. And the struggle is on to what to do about it. And that's what I came here to hear. I think people are searching, and we're searching wherever we can. And that I think that the direction forward for us is to hear what you have to say and to hear what whoever else represents socialism and to study the classics of socialism. And in that struggle, we'll find the way out. But I think it's a real mistake and an insult to the working class to say that the majority of the working class favors or supports or accepts capitalism. The struggle is deeply rooted in the class to get rid of capitalism.
Well, I'm not trying to insult the working class at all. In fact, the Socialist Party of Great Britain are the only political party that doesn't insult the working class. We don't say these problems are too difficult for you to understand and leave it to us as the great leaders. That's not our viewpoint at all. On the contrary, we take the viewpoint that only the working class can bring about socialism. But there's an awful lot of evidence, isn't there, that the working class, far from being all in favour of socialism, and somehow they're not getting it because of some bad leader or because of some misdirection. On the contrary, the evidence seems to be that they're in favour of it. They're not in favour of war, and they're not in favour of poverty, and they're not in favour of crime. And they complain about these things. Yes, of course they do. But nevertheless, the evidence is there that, in fact, they support capitalism. I mean, over a year ago, the majority of the working class in this country went to the polls. They voted for the Tory Party, the Labour Party, the Liberal Party, the Scottish, the Welsh Nationalists, Communist Party, Liberal Party. They voted for all those political parties that are in favour of the buying and selling social system. Last week, the American working class went to the poll and voted for the Republican and Democratic Party. I know there was other parties, but those two major political parties, all of whom heavily committed to the buying and selling system. So the evidence would seem to be to me that the majority of the working class are in favour of capitalism. And I think in Germany, not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago, they had an election and so on and so on. And in Russia, there's no evidence that the majority there want world socialism. On the contrary, they seem to be in favour of their group, a national owning class, still holding control over the means of production and distribution. Likewise in China and elsewhere. The evidence to me seems overwhelming that the majority of the working class think that anything other than the buying and selling system is crazy.
The working class bylaws, members of the working class and other poor people didn't vote in the election for either Carter, Reagan, or any of the other parties. That the government and the press would like you to think 50% or 52% of people voted. But that's an exaggeration beyond merit. And maybe 30% of the people in that, perhaps 10 or 15% of the working class participated in the election. But in addition to that, the workers class, workers in general, don't participate in the trade unions. And that's a genuine problem, which is different from not participating in the political parties, I think. But by and large, the great majority of the working people are fed up with what they understand the system is and are looking for a way out. And that way out will be socialism when the struggle is successful. And I think that you exaggerate the adherence to capitalism. I don't know on principle, here in this country and certainly around the world, that the working people of the world do not embrace and accept and idolize capitalism. They're fighting in what ways they can against it, and one day will succeed in that fight, and that will be the ushering in of socialism.
Well, see, I think it might be worthwhile to have a look at some of those figures you're talking about. You just reckon that only something like 30% of the electorate in the USA voted. Well, unless there is distortion, I know these pairs of distortion, I understand a much higher figure than that. But the one I will take you to task on is that only 15% of the working class voted. Because in the United States of America, like all developed capitalist countries, over 90% of the population are members of the working class. And that's important, this one. What is a class? In other words, we think that doctors and lawyers and university professors are just as much members of the working class as street sweepers or labourers or people who happen to be unemployed at present. Because we define the working class as all those men and women who own little or nothing but their ability to work. And you've got to work for a wage, a salary, a commission, and in order to live. Whereas the owning class, a very small handful of the population, less than 10% probably in a country such as the USA, who own and control the means of producing and distributing wealth, and who don't have to work in order to live, but can live off rent, interest, and profit. I mean, that class division exists throughout the globe, and depending on its historical and social development, it roughly goes round about a ratio of 90%, 10%. Some places it's not as marked as that, some places it's even more marked than that. But nevertheless, that is the class structure of it. And the people who didn't vote in that election, it wasn't the fact they didn't vote in that election because they were fed up with capitalism and they wanted world socialism. If only that was the case. I mean, the World Socialist Party of the United States, which puts their newspaper, the Western Socialists, a very small organisation with very little support in the United States of America. Likewise, our companion parties throughout the globe. And that's where our evidence comes from. I mean, when I go into a public house, or I go into my work, or I go to dancing, or I go to a club, and I sit just talking to people, I don't get the impression that I want to abolish the wages system. Not unless maybe I went to a conference at Clapham High Street, the Socialist Party of Great Britain, and didn't know I was in that particular public house, and think, good God, this is the game, this. Everybody's talking about it. But I know from my own practical, bitter experience, I wish it wasn't the case. The majority of the working class, unfortunately, know of no alternative to the buying and selling system. And the 99% attitude at first hearing to the case for world socialism is, a world without money, that's crazy. It's true what you say, though, and I've got to give you this, and it's one of the things for optimism in the world socialist movement. People don't like what's happening. But then you'd have to be insane to like to know a third of the world's population starving while food's destroyed. You'd have to be mad to be glad what's happening in Iraq and Iran. You'd have to be crazy to say, well, that's really good news from Cambodia, wouldn't you? Or what's going on in El Salvador? I mean, unless you come out of the confines of an insane asylum, you must be displeased, to say the least, of what's happening in the world. It's poverty and it's crime and all the rest of it. But that doesn't make you a socialist. That doesn't make you determined to get rid of capitalism. It's a start, but only the first feeble start. That's that discontent.
I'm just going to go back to the American comments later, in relation to the fact that you said that the working class is in favour of capitalism. Surely the real fact of the matter is that the working class aren't allowed access to, shall we say, socialist ideas and attitudes and literature. And really, that's the cause of the problem here. It's not necessarily that they're inherently all capitalism, it's just that, you know, for example, here at college, we can join socialist groups and read magazines, etc. But your average working class person who works 40 hours in a factory hasn't the means or the access to these alternative physical ideas. And therefore, really, that's the problem. And it's not really a case of the working class being for capitalism. It's just that they haven't had the chance to look at an alternative idea, really.
Well, and some sympathy with what you're saying, but how true is it in the long run what you're saying? I mean, there's no, as far as I'm aware, there's no evidence to suggest that people in universities are more acquainted with the case for world socialism than those outside it. Far from it. I don't see much evidence for that. I never went to a university. Many members of the Socialist Party of Great Britain or the World Socialist Party of the United States of America didn't manage to get to a university. I got thrown out of school when I was 15. But nevertheless, I had access. I worked in a factory, I worked in buses, I worked in offices. I had access to what was happening round about me. In the days of the newspaper, the radio, and nowadays the television, I would have to be a rather badly informed person who wasn't aware that something like a third of the population is starving. You don't have to go to university to know that. Nor if you're a member of working class and you're working these hours in a factory. And I don't think there's many of them working 14 hours a day now. There may be some, right enough. But they're well aware of the problems. The problem is poverty. That's why so many people do the football pools. That's why many people get into the alcohol or the hash or the cocaine or whatever. Well, it's a bit dear, that, right enough. But get into whatever they can to try and get a bit of relief from it. Now, they don't need a university education to be aware of the fact that they're poor. And we think that as capitalism develops, those contradictions between poverty and riches, those major contradictions between what society can produce and how it's dealing with the majority of the population, they become more and more obvious. They become more and more widely known. It's quite true what you say, of course, the access to information is limited in the sense that the major daily newspapers are owned by capitalist groups who are not liable to put out the case for world socialism. The television and the radio and so on are owned either by private individuals or owned by the state. And of course the ideas that they put out on political matters will be bland, complacent and orthodox. But nevertheless, during the time when the Roman Catholic Church in feudalic England held sway over all propaganda, that didn't mean that because they had control of the propaganda machinery, they were the only men that could read or write at one stage. It didn't mean that ideas didn't change. Because as a means of production developed, the new ideas about the world that people lived in came about. That's how with the capitalist revolution throughout Europe. Because the means of production in turn leads to new ideas, new concepts about social relationships and how man stands in relationship with the rest of the world. And that's exactly how socialist ideas develop. As the means of production develops, the concept of scarcity amongst plenty, the concept of class ownership and that becomes more obvious inside the university and outside it. So although it's true we'd like to have more information and be able to put out more information about it, we don't take the pessimistic viewpoint that as long as the owning class control the major propaganda machinery that we are doomed. On the contrary, we think that these ideas, socialist ideas, are in line with new developments and will never be stopped. Short of course, of a nuclear holocaust. Short of that, there's no way that the ideas of socialism won't develop and won't become more and more easily accessible to people.
Okay, And she's submitting special three demands of the march, which are full information regarding the effects of container breach, and details of how to deal with such a breach was published. And I think that local authorities have given high level of control and also information regarding the dangers and the possibilities. And the main thing is that the various authorities in control are just not producing any information. And when they do produce information, it's generally full scale. The full information regarding the sexual allegation, details of the plan to deal with such a breach and privilege. The more stringent tests are carried out in the role of containers, and that the ability of these containers to resist applicants will leave intentional punishment, not wherever possible, and the chance to stop short of that information. Nuclear waste trains will be routed to avoid most of what sessions, and radiation monitoring will work and into contact with those containers. And the ban on transport of nuclear waste on the same trains is corrosive. Speed restrictions will be imposed on the trains. The speed limits will be lowered to ensure that both containers remain intact in the event of a serious riot. The public pressure is important. The public inquiry will be held into the entire wash of nuclear waste transport in the UK. So the imagination has just been coming out.
Well, sure, there's a few things I'd like to say about that. For instance, there's nothing new about it. The question of the nuclear thing is new, of course, in relation to the past. But, I mean, way back in the last century, the proposition about injurious materials or explosive materials and so on to members of the working class was in the news, as it were. And, of course, umpteen people have died, thousands of people have died from cancer and all the rest of it, because the work conditions, and there's been these awful accidents, miners die and all the rest of it. Now, the thing about that is all efforts to deal with that, some of them are successful. For instance, if you read, and no doubt you have read, the Hammonds, the Bleak Age, about the 1840s in this country, where actually a legislation was passed about sanitation and so on. Here we've got a problem of capitalism, which basically arises from the fact that they're looking for cheap methods of fuel, of power. And at the same time, of course, they're always trying to cheapen that production. And it's cheaper to bury it somewhere or to think rather than take any real precautions. Actually, there is some doubt whether, in fact, there is any safe way to get rid of this stuff anyway. But not granted that you've got a social system such as capitalism where people aren't important. But the important thing is cheapen production and to try and increase your profit yield. Then these efforts are reforming a specific problem of capitalism. I've taken up the efforts of men and women at the working class very sincere, I'm no doubt in that proposition. But of course the thing is that is the cheapest means are producing this destruction. It's very necessary in a competitive society. So all those efforts and all those thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, and all those signatures and all those very emotive demonstrations have done nothing, basically nothing. Now we're at the situation where I think the other day in that Dimbleby programme was something like 4 tons of TNT for every human being on Earth. Stockpile, we're into the situation of what they laughingly call overkill. And this problem will carry on as long as we'll get production for profit. So to ask you, rather than concern yourself with a specific problem of capitalism, either the growing crime rate, the bad housing, the lack of education, the health hazards are nuclear waste, the health hazards are all sorts of materials that members of the working class are asked for, all on the face of it, worthwhile efforts. That in fact, what you're dealing with it is you're dealing with a problem atomistically. You're dealing with it piecemeal, one bit at a time. And even should you have some limited success in this particular area, then of course there's all these other areas that you've had to ignore in order to deal with that specific problem. Whereas we think, if you're going to really be a problem solver here, you're going to have to deal with the cause of them, which is production for profit. It's a class-divided society that produces these problems. And the real practical way to deal with this is rather protest about a specific aspect of capitalism is organized to get rid of the cause of those problems.